Thank you, Fermi, for giving me that time to do a follow-up interview. So, last time we were talking about your experiences in high school and your experiences across LA and how your activism shaped a lot of the stuff that happened in Surge. So, I want to go back a little bit about to the years when you were in high school. So, you share with me that throughout your life you knew that you were undocumented. Knowing that you lack the financial resources and that legal status, you told me that you did really well in high school. Can you share with me what motivated you to do well in high school, knowing that all these barriers were coming up?
Well, put it in the context of just like a before and after. Because in El Salvador, so I grew up there until I was like 11. So I was a bad student over there.
Really?
I flunked first grade, in fact. So, and I would like my other cousins, they would do really well like in school. I grew up with three of my cousins. We grew up together in the same household. They were all older than me. So the oldest and then the youngest of my aunts, they would do really well in school. And then the middle and me, the little I was the youngest, we would do really bad in school. So I think that I didn't come to this country just for a better life. I think it actually saved my life. I would probably end up being in gangs, or just being not a productive member of society, I think. Coming here, I think it was a shift. My mom was pretty strict, my stepdad as well, and they always taught me the value of education. Even though they couldn't help me with homework or things like that, but they were always like on me, and they would go to my student parent conferences. So they were involved. I think, yeah, they were just very strict. So, and I sort of like made a huge change of how I was over there and here. I think I had to do a lot with teachers, with my mom being very strict. And things like that. So I ended up doing really well here, and I think it was due to that, like just being scared of my mom. She's very strict. And I think it was also like, they tell you, right, like, oh, te trajimos aquí so you can better yourself, like. And to this day, I think I'm one of the only persons in my family to go to college here. And a bunch of people have come over, but nobody has attained a degree.
And have they come have they arrived about the same age as you did?
Different ages, some older, some around the same age. Yeah, it's just been difficult.
So when
I
you
think a little
were,
bit older than a couple of years, probably.
it's still school age. So,
Some, and then somehow arrived like later.
right. So, when you were in Salvador, you stayed with your aunt, right? Once your mom migrated. So then your aunt wasn't as strict as your mother.
No, I mean, I think it was just a lot more freedom out there. Just do whatever you want, because you would go to school from like the we were, all of us would go in the morning. So it was the there was two shifts in school. It was one in the morning, which was from 7:30 or 8 o'clock to like 11:45, and then it was like 12 or like 1, 12:30 to like 5:30 was the afternoon shift. But yeah, I just had a lot more freedom over there. It was like playing with kids, hide and go seek, biking, just going everywhere, just hanging out in the neighborhood, playing soccer. So I wasn't really interested in school, just having fun as a kid.
So then once you moved here, you didn't have time to have fun anymore.
Well, here's very different because over there we live in a house in a neighborhood that everybody knew each other, and here it was like a single apartment. there was nothing really to do. So it was just like watch TV or movies or video games, you know. But I was not used to any of that. So it was just like, I guess it was just like focusing on school was like, and plus like living, it's like one of those things. I'm reading this book called David versus Goliath, which talks about by Malcolm Gladwell. He does this analysis of like what may seem like as a disadvantage, you know, in this case for me was like living in a single apartment with like my stepdad, my sister, four of us, you know, sharing like a studio pretty much. But what that allows is that everybody knows what you're doing. You know, if you're not at the house, they know. If you're not at the house, you're doing homework, they know, because there's no space.
So
what may, so what may seem as a disadvantage in this case, living in a low-income community, single apartment, turned out to be an advantage to me. And then, because it was like just being there, you know, and everybody knows like what you're doing, if you're doing your homework or not. Like they're really able to, like my stepdad would come home like around 4:30, around the same time I would be there. My mom at that point wasn't working, just my formative years. So like we had her at home, she would cook and do all those things. So I think that was made a big difference. Plus then I, you know, doing activism, I met some really great mentors that helped me along the way to like apply to college with my personal statement, all of that. So I think it was a combination of a lot of different factors. But it's just so interesting because the research that Malcolm Gladwell does is around like how do sometimes Davids, right, the be Goliath. And it's like sometimes it doesn't, things that may seem as disadvantage turn out in life to be advantages. And it's just so interesting. Now, it's not always the case, but I think with my case, I'm beginning to look at it through those lens.
Right, and then you don't
know. The same thing with undocumented sometimes, you know? Because as an undocumented student, like we talked about last time, I also don't have student loans at all. I never did. And so many people have gone to like law school without no student loans, medical school, like, you know, and then I hear some other people that are citizens. Like I just read somebody on somebody's Instagram. They were like, I'm $250,000 in debt, you know? That's a house. Not in LA, but everywhere else. Most
where?
So it's like those things, you know, I think that we have to look at them from a holistic approach. It's not just like, oh, poor kids, they don't have papers. It's like, so many of us in the stories that you're probably hearing have been able to shift those seemingly insurmountable odds to like really great advantages, you know, the ability to read people, the ability to adapt to a new environment, the ability to work as a team, the ability to be resourceful. Like those are all skills that you need in the job market of today. And it just feels like, man, that was great. Being on Dr. was great preparation for survival skills and in a creative way and finding solutions to things that other people may not see, you know?
Yes. Jorge shared something that he said that being undocumented was the best thing that happened in his life. And it resonates with what you just said. But I do think that it's a common thing that's coming up in these interviews with older folks, is that it is a blessing in disguise. It sounds like it's only when you have a strong support team, like someone supporting network, like someone who's supporting you, right? You have your caring parents who make sure you did well, you found the mentors, the right mentors, you hang out with the right, you share your story with the right people. So I do agree with that. It's just like finding the support group, right? To help you go through everything that you're going through. And at the end, you reflect on it and then you understand like, it was a disadvantage, but it helped you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Foster your growth.
Yeah, I'll just mention one caveat. I don't think it's the best thing that ever happened, because it can't be, you know? But I also don't want to make it seem as we're masking the structural oppression and racism that exists in our immigration system, because we have to talk about that. And too often we see personal stories through the lens of overcoming odds and this American narrative of, like, despite all the, you know, the odds, they overcame and now they achieve this. Why can't you do it, right? Why can't you, like, pull yourself up by your bootstraps? And that's one thing that I also disagree a lot with Jorge and some of the business people, like Norma and them, because they saw the world as that, more like, you could do it. If you, like, this narrative of, like, you can be anything you want, you know? If you just set your mind to it, if you work really hard. Like, I reject that narrative completely.
Mm-hmm.
And it's this, lie that the U.S. tells you, like, you know, we see the rags to riches kind of story, right? And I don't agree with that at all. Because it masks the structural racism and the structural systems that keep people oppressed, right? Like, the fact that a cadre of activists at Casta LA are quote unquote making it or just thriving doesn't mean that the hundreds of thousands of other undocumented students, like I just mentioned, my family, haven't, you know? And you're right, like, the stars really have to align for some people to succeed. But I reject that narrative of, like, if you just put, like, set your mind into it, like, work hard, you know? It's not as simple as that. And I think we still need to change our immigration system that's connected to our prison system, that's connected to our healthcare system. I think we have to approach the research in this case from that sort of lens and not through, oh, you know, Fermin made it, or Jorge's making it, or Norma's doing well. Like, it has to also be, like, the voices that are not in this space.
Right, I totally agree with you. Like, that's what I say, you know, you had to have the right support group behind you, helping you get through this, because a lot of the people lack that support group. And that's, you know, when they aren't able to fulfill their goals. I totally agree. Okay, so thank you for sharing that. That was really meaningful. So again, I wanna move a little forward through to your activism efforts, because that really came in high school, right? So
started in high school. Yeah.
Starting high school. So did it start at the freshman year, or a little getting closer to applying to college?
Like around my junior year, sophomore, junior year.
Okay, and you mentioned that you met someone from Chile from the CDN network, the WhatsApp part of the Chile, the youth. So it seems like a lot of the things that you did was involved with the Chile and some other coalitions, right? Did you continue to work with them?
Yeah, when I went to college, I was the first year, I was the community affairs representative or community liaison. So I would be the representative to Chirla for the California Jeep Network. Yeah, we organize all kinds of stuff. I've been sort of involved with Chirla for a long time. Then in my professional career, I also had a job in different organizations, like when I was at SEIU. Local 2015, which is the largest union in California with over 385,000 members. I was in the communications department, and I worked very closely with Chirla and their communications team to do campaigns around the Clean Dream Act, you know, worker rights. So they've always been like a part, even if I'm in another professional setting, since I have those relationships that go back like more than a decade now. it's always really great to work with them in a different capacity, right? More like a professional space.
Okay, but you're so continuously you are working somehow with them, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what are your now that you have this capacity to reach more people through your job, what are your the activism that you pursued?
Yeah, I mean, the activism, it's really around, centered around like low-income communities, communities of color, and uplifting their voices through like social media, organizing, coalition building, policy campaigns, all of that. And I think just being part of, being in the communication space, mm-hmm. really allows you to one, be creative, but two, have a be a driving force in how to shape the conversation around immigration or around any social justice issue. Like I said, when I was at the union, we were at the forefront of shaping the conversation around worker rights and what it means to be a caregiver, because we work with caregivers and healthcare providers. So they were like, and it was like the union is made up of almost like 80% women of color, you know, especially Latina, Filipino mm-hmm. women, Black women. So it was really great to have the immigrant experience working in that space, but also being able to just share their stories and work in coalition with them. One of the campaigns that we won was raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour. It's like a mm-hmm. couple of years ago. And that was one of, we raise wages for 5 million people in the state, you know, which is huge, right? Like,
yes.
Like in college, we were like organizing hundreds of people, but now we're like organizing and impacting the lives of millions of people, you know? And I think that's really a testament to like building power and then just being in that sort of, being with an organization that's one of the most powerful organizations in the state. And having that sort of like financial backup, people power, you know, that's like fucking real. Like we would go to the board of supervisors in Los Angeles to win like a contract for like 180,000 healthcare workers, you know, and that would be like, you know, a year or 2 year campaign, but we would have an impact in like the pockets of real people, like getting money in their pockets. And that's something I feel super proud of, and I sometimes we don't celebrate that.
Yes.
But like, man, like we've impacted the lives of millions of Californians here, you know, through some of the organization that I've been a part of.
Yes, yes, mm-hmm. I agree. I can see that. So it sounds like you're always working to help others, right? Whether it's immigration or workers' rights. And technically, you couldn't have chosen to work in whatever you wanted. It didn't have to be this organization that helping communities that come from a disadvantaged background. What do you think motivated to stay in this fight and keep helping, keep working to help folks?
I think it's just has been my polarization as a young person. Like I would never like... I mean, I'll never say never, but I guess it's not attractive mm-hmm. for me to use my skills to go sell you like a Coca-Cola bottle or work for McDonald's, you know, or work mm-hmm. for like any of these multinational corporations, work for a bank or whatnot. Like, mm-hmm. has not, it just, I think my values and political analysis that I developed in high school and in college. Mm-hmm. is what has kept me in the movement. Like looking at the systems that keep people oppressed and like in your place, you know, so to mm-hmm. speak. Right. And looking at my own story as a sort of like point where like I know that US foreign policy had a lot to do with why my family came here.
Right.
You know, and I don't want to waste my energy, time, and creativity and skills, perpetuating those systems that sort of like lead to mass migration. And so I just rather understanding those systems allow me to just keeping the fight, you know. And I think I'm committed to being like a lifelong organizer and movement building person. I don't see myself, at least in the short to midterm goals, I don't see myself like going anywhere. Yeah. I think I've tried, like it has come up like to mind, like at certain points, and like, man, I should just go to private sector and make money. But has not been my goal, you know. And I still think you could live like a good, comfortable life, working and to improve the lives of other people. It doesn't have, that has been like an internal struggle for a while, right? But I think that money isn't everything for me, or like I'm not like, oh, you know, like I gotta start a business, oh, I gotta start that, like. But what I do want to start is spark change. And it's just different ways of looking at life, I think.
Right.
It doesn't mean like through a business you can't impact people's lives. Mm-hmm. But I just don't like, I guess I don't want to perpetuate capitalism. It doesn't mean like folks that are starting like small, I'm very pro small business, right? If you're starting a taco stand or like, you know, you're hustling out there to provide a service for people, that's great. But I think when it comes to like multinational corporations and the way they seize power and then use the power to influence their tax system, influence foreign policy, like, you know, trying to get cheap labor, that's where I'm like, we cannot be part of that. We have to like, in fact, fight against that.
Right. Just give more power to the people, right? That's so good.